Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back. Another edition of the Gridiron Graduates hitting you back up. That's right, took a week off last week, again, because of Ian's move. So we're being nice and giving you two episodes this week to kind of catch up and get these division previews out of the way before the preseason starts. So glad to have you back with us. And as always, Ian joining me on the ones and twos. What's going on?
Not much, man. We are literally days away from preseason football, and it's preseason, so not gonna get like super excited, but I am gonna get super excited just because it's new football, and I really just miss breaking down games and having new stuff to talk about. So I'm doing really well with just
Absolutely,
because.
yeah. It's nice to go back and watch previous games, but just have an actual live football to watch and actually sit there and talk about it with other people is always a good feeling. So it's going to be nice to have it back Sunday, and should be a good weekend with the Hall of Fame ceremony. So let's jump back into it. We got our last two divisions to talk about. We've been rolling along real nice and gonna wrap it up tonight. So let's start with the NFC East, and let's start with the Washington Redskins. And certainly with the Redskins, anytime you talk about them, the discussion always begins and ends with one Robert Griffin III. When he came into the league, and he was dynamic, as we know. Absolutely outstanding rookie season, led them to the division title. But then, of course, injuries just have really derailed him the last couple years. So certainly this has become a make or break season for RG3, and it certainly doesn't help that Jay Gruden, his head coach, doesn't exactly have the fullest support of Griffin. So this is definitely a team that's going to go as far as Robert Griffin will let them go. What do you think on these guys?
Yeah, they're kind of a tough team, I think, to really feel good about. Like you mentioned, Robert Griffin III, who knows what he's going to be, who he's going to be. His health issues the last couple years have really robbed us from seeing what he can become. I mean, I know everyone kind of has forgotten of what he did in 2012 as a rookie, but he was a really special player. And I don't think it's fair to take away what he accomplished as a rookie. I don't think it's fair to accomplish what he did at Baylor. This was a guy that a lot of people thought that he would be able to thrive even as just like a pocket quarterback. I think there's a lot of revisionist history when I see people say that, oh, it was always a question whether he was good in the pocket or not. I don't feel that way. I think at the at realistically going through the draft process in 2012, it was a pretty he was I mean he was a great prospect that we all felt, I think, pretty strong about that he was going to be a really great player. And he was until he got hurt. So last year I think he showed some strides. I think he looked a little bit better at times, trusting his legs. There still wasn't that strength and explosiveness in his lower body. So hopefully now the full off season to kind of prep and prepare his body. We'll see. We'll see. He's really the big question to me, even though they have so many other questions on their roster. He's really the main one because the direction of the franchise starts and ends with him. And we're going to see. He's got some great playmakers. He's got Alfred Morris, a deep backfield, good tight ends, good receivers. His offensive line, there's some questions, I think, at both guard positions. Sean Luava was a little bit better last year, and Spencer Long, he's a complete mystery, although some people really liked his college tape at Nebraska. If Griffin's good to go, then this could be a pretty good offense. Defensively, they tried to fill holes with a lot of veterans, Stephen Pie, Ricky Jean-Francois, Terrence Knighton, Jason Hatcher, even look in the secondary, Deshaun Goldson, Chris Culliver. You know, these are good. These are fairly good players if they're used right. Chris Culliver is probably one of the better ones of the group. They have a good group of pass rushers with Junior Gallette now, Preston Smith, a stud second rounder, Ryan Kerrigan's really good, and Trent Murphy's a nice second or third option as a pass rusher. So, you know, they've got good talent up and down the roster. They don't have much depth, but they have good talent starting. I think that this is a team that, if Jay Gruden is a decent coach, this should be a pretty decent and competitive team. The big question, like I said, is that Robert Griffin, and then what happens if they suffer some injuries? Because this isn't a team that's really built itself over the years. They just plugged holes with a lot of veterans. So, and we've seen that before as we've gone through some of the other teams and conferences and divisions, that kind of that similar win now and then hopefully develop for the future. We'll see how that works out. But I like this outlook on this team a little bit. It's a really tough division, though. And ultimately, that's going to be, you know, can they gain a couple wins against the Eagles or Cowboys? And can they at least split or win both against the Giants? If they can split with everybody, I think this is probably looking like a seven win team. And I think that's a pretty good boost for them, considering the drama and everything they've had around them.
Yeah, and you know, they certainly ended the season on a little bit of a high note. You know, they obviously had to feel good about themselves, basically eliminating the Eagles from the playoffs, second to last game of the season. So that kind of gave them a little bit of a boost going into this season. I was surprised with the Brandon Scherff pick, though, in the first round, because it seemed like a lot of people had him pegged as a guard. So I wouldn't have thought, you know, because you usually don't see guards going in the top five. But it looks like they're going to keep him at right tackle. So in that sense, the move, you know, the pick looks good. And obviously he was a pretty dominant tackle at Iowa. So that gives him two solid tackles. Obviously Trent Williams is one of the better left tackles in the game. You know, you mentioned the pass rushers. Ryan Kerrigan just got a new contract, and deservedly so, being, you know, is really coming, really become one of the better pass rushers. Trent Murphy is probably going to have a bigger role now that Brian Arakpo's in Tennessee. Preston Smith, another solid player, like you said, and Junior Gallette, even with, you know, despite the off-field issues that have arisen for him, and we talked about this before, he was the best defensive player for the Saints last season. Now he comes in for the Redskins, and so those are four solid guys that can provide a nice rotation as far as rushing the passer goes. I agree. I feel like this is probably a 5 or 6 win team, though, because, again, it comes down to Robert Griffin and really his relationship with Jay Gruden. You know, if they get along, maybe something can happen, because, again, this offense has some talent. And I know Pierre Garçon's numbers dropped last season, but him and Jackson are expected to flip-flop positions. You know, you're going to have Deshaun as the X and Garçon as the Z. And historically, the Z has been the more featured receiver in Jay Gruden's offense. So that should help a guy like Pierre Garçon, who's only two seasons removed from catching 113 passes. So if they can get him more involved in the offense and keep Deshaun as the deep threat, which no reason to think he wouldn't be playing at X now, you know, they could score some points and be competitive in some games and possibly steal a couple. But like you said, it's a real tough division. You know, Dallas is strong. Philadelphia, we imagine, is going to be pretty good. even though it's a completely different team, and the Giants are a dark horse, so they'll be competitive, but they'll probably end up in the bottom of the division. So,
yeah, it's so hard too, because if Griffin gets hurt, and which is very realistic, you know, you're actually relying on guys like Colt McCoy, Kirk Cousins, and I mean in that division, there's no way.
Yeah, and we've already seen those two really can't do much for this team. So
right.
If Griffin goes down, you could pretty much kiss the season goodbye for Washington.
Yeah. And hopefully that won't be the case. As just football fans,
yeah, we'd rather see Griffin in there.
Because he was just so fun to watch.
Yeah,
and he's good.
Exactly. You know, he makes that team worth watching.
Yep.
You know, I know Colt McCoy has kind of done okay, but he's just kind of there. And Kirk Cousins is really disappointed. You know, obviously he hasn't started many games, but in the games he has played, he hasn't shown much of an ability to really lead an NFL offense. So really, that's it comes down to the health of RG3, so hopefully he stays intact. Let's move on now to a team that really is a bit of a dark horse in this division and in the NFC, but there's also a chance that they could really be low in the win total again, and that's the New York Giants. What's interesting for this season is their last Super Bowl win came in 2011, and the Super Bowl before that was 2007. So could we be seeing a bit of a pattern with the Giants with these every 4 years, like we're seeing with the San Francisco Giants? They've been winning every 2 years. Maybe the Giants are going to start winning every 4 years. But with the loss of Will Beatty, the left tackle, that hurts, especially because they now have to thrust a rookie into that left tackle spot in Ereck Flowers. Now, I liked Ereck Flowers, but it doesn't. I guess a lot of the draft picks didn't feel he was ready to be thrown right into that left tackle spot early on, but now he has to, and you know, we'll see how he holds up protecting Eli's blind side. But it was better that they went with Ereck Flowers at left instead of Justin Pugh, because Pugh can't play tackle. His arms are too short. He's more suited for an inside guard position. So, but this offense, despite the loss of Beatty, looks like it's going to be really good. You know, after the initial, you know, with the first couple weeks, how they kind of struggled to kind of gel on offense together. After they got past that, this team looked really good on offense. You know, Eli was gelling well with Victor Cruz before he went down. Obviously, Odell Beckham came out and just blew everybody out of the water, just surprised everybody. And you've got Reuben Randle, who never has fully put it together yet on a consistent basis, but if he ever could, he's got the ability to be a solid receiver, and this gives Eli, we talked last time about how Green Bay has probably the best trio of receivers. The Giants have a solid group themselves. You know, obviously it's not an elite group, but it's a good group if they all stay healthy and all stay consistent. This is a team that I think can really put up points in this division. The question, though, is can the defense hold up if the offense puts up a lot of these points? Because certainly the pass rush is going to be an issue, because Jason Pierre-Paul, if and when he gets back on the field, how long is it going to take him to get back into the swing of things, especially now that he has to learn how to play with four fingers? And unfortunately, there's people that think, oh, well, you know, he only lost a finger. It's not like you really need that to play defensive end. Well, you kind of do, because hands are just as important, if not one of the most important traits you need as a pass rusher. So certainly he's going to be interesting to watch. And then the secondary is going to be something to watch as well. You know, obviously you'll have Landon Collins at one safety spot. The other safety spot's up for grabs. You know, there's talk that their fifth round pick, Michael Thompson, might end up as a starter. So you might have two rookies there in the back of the secondary. Luckily, though, they have two strong, very good veteran corners in Prince Amukamara and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who really has revived his career ever since his poor run with the Eagles, although you can kind of blame coaching a little bit there. But after bouncing back in Denver, he's done well with the Giants as well. So they're tough to figure out. You know, this could be as low as a 6-win team, or they could be a dark horse to win this division if, you know, things happen with Philadelphia or Dallas.
Yeah, they're an interesting team, like you said. I mean, the offense, I totally agree. I mean, this could be a really explosive offense. It just depends on the kind of performance they get from Eli Manning. That offensive line you mentioned, you know, there's some question marks around there. They just have always struggled with injuries, and it's so strange. They continue to rely on these players that have had injury issues, and it's a shame. It's really a shame. And, you know, I'd really hope that this is a team that can stay healthy. They can, you know, kind of get back to the winning ways that we're used to seeing from this franchise. And we haven't seen that in a few years. They've been in the playoffs since their last Super Bowl victory. Their dominant pass rush is no longer dominant. Like you mentioned with Jason Pierre-Paul, we have no idea what he's going to be able to bring to the table with potentially one hand. It's another situation, kind of like Washington, where you could see it go very well, or you could see it just totally collapse. And with so many things in the balance this year, Eli Manning contract year, I think they need to wait and see what he does this year. His numbers were really inflated by a new system last season, and I don't think just looking at his raw stats are going to be a good way to judge whether he's really a playoff caliber quarterback anymore. I really have severe questions about that. Although he can put up great numbers at times, there's still those instances where he's Eli Manning and he makes really bad plays and really bad decisions. And it just is what it is. I mean, it's just kind of how he is. And it's just the nature of the game. At 34 years old, he's not going to change. Like, he just is who he is. And I don't think people sometimes want to believe that. Obviously, two Super Bowls, you know, that's gonna change. You know, I don't know what that feels like to win two Super Bowls, so I don't have an attachment like that to a certain player, like Giants fans may have. So, you know, this is a team to me that I could see do, like I said, make the playoffs, but I could also see them in the top 10 of the draft. I'm gonna lean toward more top 10 of the draft just because I don't trust them injury wise. I mean, this is yet another year where they're relying on guys who have gotten hurt. And it's a big what if. A lot of their situations is what if. And I'm going to go against that. I'm going to say this is a 6-win team. They're going to make fireworks go off certain weeks, but ultimately...
No pun intended.
Yeah, right. They're getting a little bit better here and there, but... Like, I love the pick of Odigizawa in the third round. I even like adding Eric Flowers. I didn't love him as a draft pick, but I liked him. I just don't love him at left tackle. But overall, I think this is a team that just needs a little more. A little more here and there throughout the roster. A little more on the offensive line. A little more in the backfield. Although I like Rashad Jennings. I like Shane Vereen. I like... Their secondary, to an extent, their free safety position scares the heck out of me. Mykel Thompson even admitted after the draft he didn't expect to be picked. So I don't know why they drafted him in the fifth round. Like, that made no sense. Their cornerback depth is really bad outside of – they have two really good starters in Rodgers, Camardi, and then Prince and Mukamara. And then the rest of their depth chart is pretty bad. It's just – it's a thin team, and their starters, if they're healthy, should be – it should be a good team. Like, if they stay healthy, I think this might be a 9-win team. I just don't – I just can't sit there and tell myself that that's going to happen. And hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. Because this is a team that they do great in the playoffs when they get there. So
yeah.
I'm going to go with 6 wins, though. I just think injuries will once again be the storyline of their season.
And just to touch on the cornerbacks, you know, it's not like Prince Amukamara has been the poster child of health either. He's had injury problems in the past.
Right.
So he's certainly a candidate to – now, I'm not saying he will. I'm just saying – there's always that possibility that he could go down, and if he does, well, then the Giants are in trouble, because then you're probably looking at a guy like Jaron Hosley, who's going to have to step up into a starting role. I was going to mention the running backs, too. You know, I've always been a fan of Rashad Jennings, even back in his days with the Jaguars. You know, I always thought he was, even in a backup role, I thought he was always a solid player behind MJD. I like Shane Vereen as a third down back, so I think that's they have a pretty solid group of running backs. I also have to give a shout out to Henry Hynoski, from over in Central PA. So for all my local fans listening, and there's your shout out to Hynoski. I'm gonna go ahead though and say 7 wins though too. You know, 7-9. Again, because I'm really worried about the offensive line. Losing a guy like Beattie until November really hurts. You know, so throwing a rookie like Flowers in against some of these top pass rushers, because he's going to have to go up against great, well, not in week one, but when you have pass rushers like Greg Hardy, Connor Barwin, Ryan Kerrigan, just within your own division. I know they play the Falcons week 2, so he might see a little bit of Vic Beasley. Can't believe I almost drew a blank on his name. They'll be seeing him. And then some of the other pass rushers in the NFC South. And then the AFC East. You know, talking about some of the other opponents on their schedule, they play the AFC East, and as we'll talk about in a little bit, that division's chock full of strong defensive lines. So throwing a rookie like Flowers in there could spell a little bit of trouble for the Giants, and if he can't hold his own, this team's in big trouble. Because, you know, you brought up a great point. There's not much depth. I'm looking at the depth chart right now of the Giants. And the guy that Arlides has listed behind Flowers is Michael Bumero, who spent a little bit of time with the Eagles. The only good thing about Bumero is he has big size. Not much else. So if, you know, a guy like Flowers or a guy like Marshall Newhouse goes down early in the season, they're in trouble. So that's why I'll give them 7 wins, because I think the offense will be good enough to score points and win some games, but might not be able to do it on a consistent basis. So, let's move on, and, boy, I guess I should be pretty excited to talk about this team, shouldn't I? Considering it's the team that, I mean, as analysts, we don't try to make it too known that, you know, who we root for and whatnot. We try to be as unbiased as possible, but I mean, people that know me have figured out that I've grown up as an Eagle fan, and they're obviously the team that I've followed the closest. So certainly this is probably the team that I know the best, although I'm trying to work on knowing all 32 teams.
not necessarily equally as, but as best I can. And we all do too. You know, we're all always learning and all doing what we can to know as much as we can about all 32 teams. But so I'm going to go ahead and let you start, give your take on the Eagles, and then I'll jump in.
Sure. So I like this team a lot. I like what Chip Kelly is building. I respect the hell out of him for building his team how he wants to build it. We'll obviously see how some of the stuff works out. But most of the moves he's made this offseason, I'm a big fan of. I think the Evan Mathis release, I wasn't a fan of that. Outside of that, I really can't find many moves that I'm not a fan of. They really did a good job of getting impact players into the system that fit what Chip Kelly wants to do. And that sounds so basic. It sounds so easy. But so many front offices do a horrible job of that. I love how active he is in trades. I also really like that he's building this team so that his quarterbacks won't have the weight of the world on their shoulders. I think that the combination of DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews, and then, of course, when you're adding in Darren Sproles as the three-headed monster, but mainly Matthews and Murray as the runners, it's going to be an epic running attack. You've got a receiving core with Riley Cooper, who's a nice player, but then Nelson Agholor is extremely explosive. Jordan Matthews, who's really, really emerging as one of the top slot receivers in the NFL. Josh Huff, who's a tremendous prospect. And then they've got veterans like Miles Austin. Jeff Mail is a younger player, but he's still pretty familiar with what Chip Kelly does, obviously. Tight end position, you got to like what they've got there. Brent Celek, Zach Ertz, two quality tight ends. Offensive line, the only thing I worry about is depth. It's a great starting unit. You worry about the depth there. Hopefully they won't have to utilize that too much. Defensively, I had this team as the number one linebacker unit in the NFL and also as a top five. I think I had a number three or maybe number two as a top five defensive front as a whole. So front seven. They are just tremendous. They can bring pressure from wherever. Their linebackers are capable of doing anything. Getting D'Amico Ryans back healthy will be a nice boost, but also Jordan Hicks as a rookie, Marcus Smith possibly contributing. I mean, this is a really exciting group as, like, just like the front seven. Secondary, Byron Maxwell's an upgrade. I don't think he's a shutdown corner. I don't think he's a number one corner, but he's a good corner, and he's way better than what they had last year. Nolan Carroll, underrated. He should have been used last year. I don't understand why he wasn't. He's a capable starter. He's not a great starter. He's a very average starter, but he's a capable guy that can line up and earn snaps. Eric Rowe, I'm a big fan of. I think he's going to be a quality cornerback. Jalen Watkins, I think he should earn cornerback snaps, but I think he's lining up at safety. I really hope he gets some playing time, because I was pretty high on him last year. And then you've got guys like Walter Thurman and Malcolm Jenkins at safety. Malcolm Jenkins is fantastic. Like, he had a great bounce back year last year after the Saints kind of sucked his soul out in 2013. But he is a fantastic safety. Really proved it again last year. Was one of the top 10 safeties by far in the NFL. And I think this is a team. I love this team. I really do. If Sam Bradford's healthy, I think he's a franchise quarterback. Obviously, the health is a huge question mark. That it's just, it's so painfully obvious to add that caveat to him. He was playing great football when he got hurt in 2013. Who knows what he looks like now? If he's healthy, if he's ready to go at some point in this season, where if he's close to that level where he was in 2013, I think we're looking at the top Super Bowl contender outside of Seattle in the conference. I really believe that. I think over Green Bay, over any of the NFC South teams, Seattle's the only other team I think that is as talented as this Eagles team. And so I'm going to assume again, I'm going to assume here a little bit that Bradford's going to stay healthy, and hope that he does, because I think he's going to be fantastic with this offense. If that's the case, I think this is a 12-win team, and I think this is really the standout team in the conference, like, besides Seattle.
I can see half of Pennsylvania stand up and jumping for joy with what you just said.
It all rides on Bradford, though.
It really does.
I hate to put that on him, but it's just how it is.
But it's obvious, you know.
Yeah.
You hate to say it, but it's true. It really depends on the health. I just have to say this, though, first. I really, 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 really hate the fact that we are sitting here in August talking about this whole Chip Kelly is racist narrative.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I cannot stand it.
It's honestly the most ridiculous thing.
It's so stupid. And
I've read all season, yeah.
And, like, that's all you see on ESPN, too, and some of the people believe it. It's amazing. You know, Stephen A. Smith, oh, why are guys like Riley Cooper here and other guys aren't? Those other guys we assume are DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin. Well, I'll give you one reason why Riley Cooper's still on this team. Because it would have cost them more to cut him than it would have to keep him. His dead money number was more than his cap savings for 2015. That's why Riley Cooper's still on this team. So, and for a guy that's based in Philadelphia, he should know better than that. But in any event, let's focus on some positives. I agree, you know. Front seven, outstanding. Fletcher Cox, one of the best defensive linemen in the NFL. Benny Logan has turned into a real nice nose tackle. He's not, you know, obviously he's not the star power name. You know, he's not the household name that people are going to think of when you talk about the Eagles. But he's become a good player in the middle of that line. Same with Cedric Thornton on the outside. You know, for a guy who was undrafted, really come into his own, has really found a nice fit, you know, on the defensive line for the Eagles. And certainly those three have become a bit of a rare, well, two of them, I should say, Cox and Thornton, have become a bit of a rarity on this Eagles team, and that they are Andy Reid disciples that are still on this team under Chip Kelly. But, you know, that's Chip Kelly for you. He wants to mold this team into his team, and, you know, for as shocking of the moves as he's made, he's come out with a good team.
Yep.
Nelson Agholor, the first-round pick, I've seen reports that say he's like Jeremy Maclin 2.0, maybe even a better version of Jeremy Maclin than what Jeremy Maclin was last season. And Maclin had a career year last year. You know, he came into 2014 having never had a 1,000-yard season. All of a sudden, he breaks through and finally surpasses that, and then he's gone. But it's understandable because Philadelphia was not paying Maclin $11 million a year.
Right.
Which is what Kansas City did. That's why he's back with Andy Reid. So Agholor, I really love in this offense. Matthews, we saw what he can do. Even with a guy like Mark Sanchez at quarterback, Matthews really broke onto the scene. So you throw a guy like Sam Bradford in there, that's really going to elevate a guy like Matthews, who can dominate just about any part of the field. Throw him outside, let him run the vertical, he's good. Throw him inside, let him run crossing routes, he's good. You know, so he may well be the best receiver on this team this season. He may be the one that, you know, ends up with the most receiving yards, you know. For all those fantasy nuts out there that want to look at the stats, this could be the top guy. And I agree with you on Josh Huff. Obviously another guy that's familiar with Chip Kelly, having come from Oregon. And also a guy who has become who became a nice return man for the Eagles last season. Of course, he had that long touchdown return against the Titans last season. So another versatile guy. I guess we do have to talk quick about the Brandon Boykin trade. We mentioned it before, how he's going to help the Steelers. Now we kind of have to talk about how his removal is going to affect the Eagles. It's understandable, though, why they made the trade. Boykin wants to play outside. He was never going to get that opportunity in Philadelphia. He was going to be stuck inside. He's a free agent at the end of the season. He wasn't going to re-sign. So at least the Eagles got something in return for Brandon Boykin. And we talked about how it could potentially be a fourth-round pick. I think the Eagles can easily get that fourth-round pick because I could easily see Boykin playing 60% of the snaps for Pittsburgh. So getting a fourth-round pick for Boykin, I think, was pretty good because they probably weren't going to get much more than that. I know people want to sit there and say, oh, well, they could have just got a conditional pick for him. Well, who's to say that conditional pick? And that pick wouldn't have come until 2017.
Right, that's a full year later.
And who's to say that pick was going to be any higher than a fourth?
Right.
You know, the only time you get a third-round conditional pick is if you lose a guy like Darrell Revis.
Right.
You know, so Brandon Boykin was not going to net them a third-round or maybe even probably at best, they're probably looking at about a fifth-round. Or I'm sorry, I should be saying compensatory pick, not conditional pick. But probably at best, you're probably looking at a fifth-round compensatory pick for Boykin. So they actually made out, I think, a little bit better with this trade than they would have if they would have just let him play out the season and walk in free agency. As far as who might replace him, there have been glowing reports on rookie Jacory Shepard, the sixth-rounder out of Kansas. It's starting to sound like he may be the starter at nickel immediately. You know, so, and obviously Chip has made it well known that he likes the bigger corners. And I tweeted the other day, you know, just kind of posting the sizes of the three corners that the Eagles drafted this season. The smallest of the three is 5'11", 195. Boykin's listed at 5'10", 185, so you can kind of see how Boykin kind of fit into that mold, kind of fit into that group. You know, for as talented as he was starting to become the odd man out when you compare him size-wise to Shepard, to Evans, and to Eric Rowe. And I'm with you. I love Eric Rowe. I thought getting him mid-second was tremendous value. You know, and all they had to do was trade up a couple spots with your Dolphins, by the way.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a great pick. You know, they could have went Byron Jones in the first, but I think they actually came out better getting Aguilar and then getting Rowe versus them getting Byron Jones and whoever they would have gotten in the second round behind Jones. So this is a real strong team. Obviously excited to watch them in more ways than one. Boy, the inside of that offensive line. I like Alan Barber. I like Andrew Gardner. I think they're decent players, but are they going to be good enough consistently to plug in those holes at the two guard positions? That's my biggest worry with this Eagles team. You know, obviously, when they released Evan Mathis, it was shocking, and it made them a worse team. It didn't make them a bad team, but it made them worse than they were when they had Evan Mathis, because he's still one of the better guards. You know, so it's a little surprising he still is a free agent, but that's probably because he's pricing himself out of a lot of teams' ranges.
Yeah, he's probably waiting for an injury to happen.
Yeah,
too.
That's probably what's going to happen. Some team is going to suffer an injury,
soon. Yep.
And some team's going to get desperate, and Mathis is going to be the first one they call.
Yep.
I'm going to be a little conservative with the Eagles, and I'm probably going to get a little bit of a backlash for this, but I'm going to say 9 wins for the Eagles. But I'm going to say those 9 wins are good enough for them to get into the playoffs. So, you know, they could definitely get to 10 wins. I just, you know.
Yeah. No, it's understandable. It's hard to sit there and project double-digit wins because so many of these teams are reliant on just these little itty-bitty things happening, breaking right. You know, and obviously preseason can change a lot of this.
Absolutely.
There will be injuries. There will be major injuries.
Yeah.
And hopefully all you do is cross your fingers and just say, I hope it's not us.
I mean, unfortunately, it just happened to the Eagles. You know, they had
with Travis Long, who was looking like he was going to be a solid linebacker, could have provided depth at both inside and outside backer. Unfortunately for him, 2 years in a row and 3 out of 4, he suffers a torn ACL. So,
yeah,
real unfortunate for him. But, yeah, without a doubt, they're certainly going to be the team to watch. And, you know, whatever fan, whoever you root for, everybody's going to be watching the Eagles just because of what Chip Kelly has done. He's really made the Eagles a team to watch just because of the way he's been running the team.
Yeah.
So, one team left, that is the defending division champs, the Dallas Cowboys. Finally got through with a playoff win last season, although they definitely got away with a holding call and probably a pass or a personal foul call against Dez Bryant. But in it, and obviously Cowboy fans are going to talk about the catch that wasn't.
Yeah.
Even though by rule it was not a catch. Sorry. As far as 2015 goes, they pretty much returned a lot of players. Obviously the big loss is DeMarco Murray. But I think Joseph Randle is good enough to kind of hold down that running back spot for the Cowboys. And you pair him with Lance Dunbar, I think the running game should still be fine. Obviously, it's not the star power of DeMarco Murray, but, you know, it could be a lot worse. Darren McFadden was their free agent signing, but let's be honest, Darren McFadden was never really going to be the full-time starter, and there's no way he's going to play 16 games anyway because he can't stay healthy. He's already on the PUP list, or at least the active PUP list, but you know, it just shows that he can't stay healthy. He's a guarantee to miss a couple games a season. Offensive line, I think, is arguably the best in the league. Tyron Smith, one of the top left tackles in the game. Travis Frederick has become a real good center. Zach Martin, a stud player, you know, Pro Bowler his rookie year. And Doug Free, solid right tackle. Leary had a good season. You know, just solid players at all five positions. And oh, by the way, they stole Lael Collins after the draft. You know, a first round talent. And they got him undrafted because of a wacky circumstances that were beyond his control and unfortunately really cost his draft position. So certainly a lot of not just quality starters but quality depth along the offensive line, which was extremely important because injuries happen all the time across the offensive line. Jason Witten, another ageless wonder, he's not the Witten of old, obviously, but still very good, still a top target for Tony Romo. So there's no reason to think this offense is going to slow down. They're going to continue to score points, and to me, I think they're the favorites to win the division again. Defensively, they obviously got great news when they found out that Greg Hardy would only be suspended 4 games instead of 10. So that's really going to help the pass rush. So once you get him back, all of a sudden, you have 3 quality pass rushers that you can rotate between Hardy, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Randy Gregory. Interior of the line will be interesting to watch with Henry Melton gone in free agency. So we'll see guys like Nick Cade and Tyrone Crawford. We'll see how they do. Jeremy Mincy along the line. Linebackers are still solid, but McLean, 4-game suspension. Hopefully Sean Lee stays healthy because this kid had a lot of potential. It's absolutely frustrating to see him continue to get injured. And for me personally, I feel for him being a fellow Penn State grad. So that right there makes him one of my favorite players and makes that another reason why it's been tough for me to watch him continue to get hurt. But if he can stay healthy, you just hope. That's just the hope that he stays healthy, especially now that he's moving to the weak side. But overall, I still think this is a good team, and like I said, they're my pick right now to win the division.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how that running back position plays out. Lance Dunbar, maybe he's possibly suffering a small injury today. They're interesting because I don't think that their success last year will be easily replicable without DeMarco Murray. And that's as easy as here's the thing with running backs. Like, yeah, they are replaceable and they are diminishing as far as value. But when you have one with the elite traits that he had, and make no mistake, like DeMarco Murray was a really good back before last year. I think that there's a misconception out there that like he was just this guy. But he averaged like 4.9 yards per carry before last year. So like he was super talented before last year. He was super talented all the way back into college. And the only thing that was holding him back was staying healthy. So I don't see how on earth they're going to provide that same level of balance that they had last year for Tony Romo. And when Romo's going to have to sling the ball around more, the Cowboys are going to suffer. It's nothing against Romo. It's just his play style. He's reckless. And sometimes that makes amazing plays. And then sometimes it makes backbreaking plays, literally with him backbreaking plays. So yeah, I'm on fire tonight. That's my second one. And
he'll be here all week, folks.
That's right. I will. This is rare for me that I would ever make somewhat of a not really funny, but it kind of makes you chuckle joke. So, and ultimately, though, realistically, I like this team. I really do. They have such good receivers. Their offensive line is fantastic. Tony Romo's fantastic. Defensively, I think they're going to be fine. They've got Greg Hardy coming back middle of the year. They've got guys, they added a couple guys to Marcus Lawrence last year. He's a good secondary rusher. Randy Gregory, obviously, this year. Jeremy Mincy's really good. He's very undervalued. I don't know why people don't talk about him more. He's a beast just as far as like a pass rusher. Tyrone Crawford's probably the best player in that defensive front. Their cornerbacks and safeties are pretty decent. Byron Jones is playing almost like a Deion Buchanan role, which I like. I think that's a good spot for him because he doesn't play as athletic as he tested, and he's got to first figure that out before he can be a great cornerback. It just, for me, it just comes back to the running game. If you can't keep Tony Romo healthy, and the only way you're really going to do that is by providing balance in this offense, I mean, obviously Brandon Whedon's not going to carry this team. So you got to really protect Romo as best you can. Because if he takes too many hits, we talked about with Denver too, with Peyton Manning, I mean, their season comes and goes with that, with him. So if he's even, scratched up, if his back is even somewhat out of place, they're going to be a disaster. They're just not going to be able to hang. So I think this is a good team. I think this is a playoff team. I do think they'll make the playoffs. I think they're going to get to 9 wins. And they may catch fire like they did last year. That's the thing with them is you just don't know because they have that ability to be really, really, really good. But I still think it's important to remember that last year was a surprise and last year was pretty unexpected. So now they've got the expectation on them and they've lost talent. So we'll see if they're going to be able to really match that expectation and that hype around them.
Just remember, for those listening, week 2, Philly-Dallas. So let's get it. DeMarco Murray faces his old team, so that'll be fun to watch. So, all right, 7 divisions down, 1 to go. Boy, time went fast for us, didn't it?
Absolutely.
One division left. Let's start with the Jets. And the first thing, I think one of the first things to talk about with the Jets is their new head coach, who really made a name for himself as defensive coordinator for the Cardinals, that of course being Todd Bowles. I thought it was well deserved for a guy like Bowles to be named head coach. And boy, you talk about the way he utilized his talent in Arizona. I can't wait to watch what he does with the Jets. I mean, my goodness. This Jets defense is back. You know, this looks like a strong defense, even with the four-game suspension of Sheldon Richardson. And who knows, he may be out more after he continues to be a knucklehead. I mean, first of all, how silly can you be to get knocked for a four-game suspension and then go and resist arrest? You know, that just makes the Leonard Williams pick look, it makes the Jets look that much more luckier that Leonard fell to them at six.
Right.
So even with that, there's still obviously a ton of talent on this team. Muhammad Wilkerson has become a dominant defensive end. Quentin Coble's is starting to come onto his own. DeMario Davis, David Harris, solid linebackers, and obviously the cornerbacks. You know, we obviously don't even have to talk about Darrell Reeves. We know what he is, back with the Jets, and he's paired with his old buddy Antonio Cromartie. So, those two I think are, because Cromartie really bounced back when he was in Arizona, and really turned back into one of the better corners in the NFL. So the two of them together, I think, is going to really make this defense good. And in safety, they got Marcus Gilchrist in free agency, and you know, they hope to see continued development out of last year's first-round pick, Calvin Price. But this is obviously the strength of this team, and it's definitely what's going to keep them competitive in a lot of games this year, what looks like an extremely improved AFC East.
Yeah, I mean, it's really impressive what they did in that secondary this year. To be able to add a guy like Darrell Revis in free agency really cannot be understated. And Revis has become the master of free agency and maximizing his value.
Boy, has he ever, yeah.
Like, he's like the LeBron James of the NFL. I mean, you just don't have guys that are able to do that. And he is a dominant athlete at cornerback. It is so hard to be a good cornerback now with the rules in place, with the athletic disadvantages that they face on a weekly basis. It is imperative to have a player like him. Like, it is – let me rephrase that. It's imperative to have a playmaker of his capability on your defense.
Right.
But to be able to have that at cornerback is so rare. He is by far, to me, the best cornerback in the NFL. And it's not really close because of consistency. When you're looking at longevity, at how long he's been able to do it, he has separated himself so well. And he's really going to be with Todd Bowles. It's an unbelievable pairing. It's so impressive to me. Around him is some pretty good talent. You mentioned Marcus Gilchrist, Calvin Pryor. We'll see how those guys work out. I don't think either of those guys are really anything more than at best average starters. But they may not need to be that anything better, because Antonio Cromartie is still a good cornerback. Buster Skrine's really poor as an outside cornerback. Now that he's going to be a full-time slot, that should fit his skill set a little bit better. I think Cleveland misused him a lot. He's still undersized. He still grabs a lot. We'll see how he ends up working out. I think he's going to be one of the big free agent busts when you look at his contract here in a couple of years. But the rest of the defense, the linebacker crew is kind of average. You kind of worry about them. Where's the edge pressure going to come from? Is it really going to come from 35-year-old Jason Babin? The defensive line is fantastic. You mentioned that. Leonard Williams, obviously, a great addition to them. Offensively, everything revolves around that offensive line and Geno Smith, especially Geno Smith. I mean, is this a guy that can just feed his playmakers? He doesn't have to maximize them. He just has to feed them. And if he can do that, and this team should be a fairly decent running team, then this team is very dangerous. I don't know about yourself, but I'm not a Geno Smith fan. I don't think he's going to be in the NFL as a starter for very long. But this is really his moment. I mean, if he's going to ever do it, now is when you do it. What are your thoughts on Geno Smith?
Yeah, he did seem to improve late in the season, the last couple of games. And what's going to help him this season is the addition of Chan Gailey as offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. I think this is kind of now or never for him, being in year three, being under a new regime, because not just the new head coach in Bulls, but you got a new GM. And obviously the Jets were aware that they needed to light a fire under Geno Smith. They went out and traded for Ryan Fitzpatrick. They drafted Bryce Petty. Now, obviously, Petty's not going to be anywhere near the starting competition, but it just goes to show you that they're kind of looking ahead. So while this is Geno Smith's job to lose, he does kind of have to look over his shoulder a little bit, because if he struggles a little bit, the Jets would probably have no problem throwing Fitzpatrick in there, because as we saw last year with Houston, he wasn't the greatest of quarterbacks, but he was able to, you know, kind of keep the course and lead the Texans to within a game of the playoffs. You know, as we talked about with the Texans, that this team was in the playoff race right through the whole season. And Fitzpatrick by no means was a stud quarterback. He was, you know, average at best. So he could come in and throw the ball to Brandon Marshall, throw the ball to Eric Decker, and let the running game do its job, let the defense do its job, and keep this Jets team competitive. So, you know, so for a guy like Geno Smith, this is kind of a make or break season. You know, if he can't do it now, then you come into year four where he's a free agent. They might not even keep him, because it's not like they're that financially committed to him, because he was only a second round pick. So that contract wasn't exactly that huge, and obviously there's no fifth year option for second round picks. You mentioned the offensive line too, pretty good. DeBrickashaw Ferguson, still, he's not the elite left tackle he once was, but he's still productive, but maybe kind of on the downswing of his career. Nick Mangold's one of the better centers, though. Giacomini is a decent right tackle, so it'll be interesting to see how this Jets offense performs and how Chan Gailey kind of utilizes everybody. I think, you know, they were kind of weak offensively last year, but they also weren't really coached all that well in the off, because who was it still? I think what's his name? I'm drawing a blank on the guy, Marty Morenweg.
Yeah,
I think it was still him last year. You know, not necessarily the most creative or the most surprising of coaches, but Chan Gailey should be able to do something with this offense. Overall, I'm going to say this is about an 8-8 team, because, you know, from where they were last year to where they hope to be is a big jump, especially with the other teams in the division. But I think 8-8 for what they have on the field and being Todd Bowles' first year as head coach, I think 8-8 would be a pretty good season for the Jets.
I agree. I think I like that number. I'm going to go with 7-9. It's a tough division. I think two other teams, the Dolphins and Patriots, which we'll talk about shortly, I think those two teams are on the up and up. And I just think that those two teams have such better quarterback play than the Jets will have, that that's really going to separate them. I think 7-9 is their cap. Mm-hmm. 8-8, though, would not be surprising. And I think they have a good coaching staff. It just depends on your faith in Geno Smith. And like I mentioned, I don't have any faith in him. So that's just kind of how I feel.
And that's fair to feel that way, because he hasn't exactly shown much in his first 2 years to kind of say, okay, he's the guy.
Right.
So, you know, this being year three, like I said, if he can't make the jump now, he may never make the jump.
Right.
So, let's move on and talk about the team you did not mention. as far as better quarterback play, because God knows they don't have it. The Buffalo Bills. And that's a shame, because this roster is really, really, really good. Especially now with Rex Ryan as head coach. For as good as the defense was last season under Jim Schwartz, it could be really good under Rex Ryan. But boy, as we've talked about a couple times on this show, this quarterback depth chart is so bad.
Yeah.
And it's, like I said, it's a shame, because if they could get average quarterback play, I think you're talking about a playoff team, because this team went 9-7 last year, with majority of the games being with Kyle Orton at quarterback. Now you have, you're probably looking at Matt Castle as probably the best quarterback on this team. And Matt Castle stinks.
Yeah.
So when your best quarterback is not that good, when your best quarterback is maybe backup at best, maybe even third string at this point at best on any other team, you have problems. When Tyrod Taylor was talked about being in the mix to be the starter,
I believe he still is, too.
He might still be.
Yeah, I believe he still is.
Castle hasn't separated himself. EJ Manuel's done nothing. So Tyrod Taylor might still be in position. So this poor quarterback depth chart, I think, is really what's going to hurt the Bills. And unfortunately, it's probably going to keep that playoff drought active.
Yeah, it's, I'm just looking at the roster right now. And it's, I honestly think if they would have a quarterback like Ryan Tannehill, even a guy like Andy Dalton, like, let's go low end. And let's say, like, the low end of average with Andy Dalton. Like, if they had Andy Dalton, I think this is a playoff team. And, like, that's heartbreaking, I think, for a Bills fan, because that's not that hard to accomplish. Like, it theoretically shouldn't be that hard to find a quarterback that's like that. But it's just, it's killed these franchises, like the Bills, the Browns, just for so long. And it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate. I honestly think Tyrod Taylor might win the job. That sounds crazy, but like, when you want to be dynamic, you have to at least have some sort of X factor. And Matt Castle doesn't have it. We know what he's going to bring to the table. Like, if Matt Castle's named starter, I think it's just to get a high draft pick to get a new quarterback next year. And EJ Manuel, I mean, he hasn't shown anything either. So it's almost painful, because this is a team that's going to be in every game every week, because they're just that physical. They're that talented every single position on the field. Offensive line's okay. That'd probably be their second Achilles heel. But really, though, it doesn't matter that much, because it's all about quarterback. And we'll see how this team does. I think this is another set. I think this is another 7-9 type team. I'm gonna stick with that number, 7-9, which makes it hard, because I'm not sure where those wins are coming, and it's really hard to have four teams and have all of them that close to each other. I guess as we get to the final two, that's kind of where I'll try to make up some of those wins.
That's where they'll separate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because even with seven wins as, like, the last place team is a lot. But we saw that last year with the AFC North. I think that's kind of how this division will be.
Yeah. I was just looking quick at the 2013 draft, which, of course, was where Manuel was drafted. Obviously, it was looking back, it was a huge reach to take him at 16.
Yeah.
But
what else? I mean, I don't know what else they could have done.
Yeah, on the other hand, that quarterback class was so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, the only other quarterback taken in the first two rounds was Geno Smith. You know, because then the next quarterback taken was Mike Glennon at 73.
Right.
So that quarterback class was absolutely terrible. You know, Matt Barkley was a fourth-round pick, and this is when Matt Barkley was supposed to be top 10. So it just goes to show you how bad that quarterback played. But it also shows that, you know, when you try to reach for a quarterback and it doesn't work out, it's going to set you back so far. And I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to say seven wins. And it's really unfortunate, too, because I thought this could have been a sleeper team to make the playoffs. But I can't sit here and say, yeah, this looks like a playoff team when they're going to be going into the season with just such poor quarterback play. You know, whether it's Matt Castle or EJ, they almost would be better off probably going with Tyrod Taylor, because at least you can have some kind of diversity. You can run a little bit of an option game with Tyrod Taylor. You know, maybe play a little option with a guy like LeSean McCoy, you know, or Fred Jackson or whomever. But boy, if it does end up being Matt Castle, it's just going to be really hard to sit here and say, you know, okay, this team looks like they're going to be in the running to make the playoffs. And I'm just going to look up their schedule quick. I know they open with the Colts, and they've got the Patriots week two. So their first two games are the two AFC finalists next from last season. They're at the Dolphins week three, so it's a tough schedule. And then we mentioned the AFCs plays the NFC, so it's just it could be tough sledding for the Bills. Their defense is really going to have to step up and really try to create a lot of low scoring games to help keep the Bills in a lot of these games, I think. So,
what's your win prediction on them?
I'm gonna say I'll go 7-9 as well on Buffalo. Like I said, because I had them as a sleeper pick, but the quarterback play knocks them down a couple wins. So, and at this point, I feel like I'm being kind of nice and giving them 7 wins.
Yeah.
So. All right. I got to talk a little bit about my team earlier. Now it's your turn to talk about your team. Or do you want me to go first?
No, go ahead. Yeah, you can go first.
All right, yeah.
See what you got to say first.
I'll talk about the Dolphins a little bit here. I like this team as a playoff team this year, first and foremost. I really like what they've done this offseason. Ryan Tannehill has been really improved as a quarterback, and you saw it throughout 2014. Really, really becoming much better at, you know, throwing the deep ball, leading an offense, and I think he's going to continue to improve. You know, having an offensive coordinator like Bill Lazor has really helped Tannehill. Still not a fan of Joe Philbin, but I think Lazor has kind of balanced that out. And without a doubt, they've really gone out and helped him by giving him all these weapons and saying, okay, Tannehill, here you go. Here's all these guys. Time for you to let loose. You trade for Kenny Stills. You draft Devontae Parker. Now, Parker's dealing with an injury, but he should be good to go, if not week one, probably some point early in the season. You sign Greg Jennings, who I think can still provide quality depth behind really any wide receiver position behind a guy like Stills. And Jarvis Landry was a real nice slot receiver last season. So you have the different levels of the passing game. You'll have the deep ball with Stills. You'll have the inside with Landry. You have all that intact. You bring in a quality tight end like Jordan Cameron. You hope he stays healthy, though, because he's had concussion issues. But when healthy, Cameron is a good tight end, a good pass-catching tight end. Running backs, good stable. Lamar Miller, if given the opportunity, which Joe Philbin has seemed hesitant to do at times, because for whatever reason he would continue to feed Daniel Thomas, who just sucks at football. But Lamar Miller, when given the chance, is a good running back. Damian Williams showed well last season. And then Jay Ajayi, the rookie in the fifth round, I think can come, you know, take a couple carries and kind of help out this offense too. And then obviously defensively, you know, Ndamukong Suh, the big free agent prize in Miami, landed him. So you add him to a defensive line that includes Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon. And even Earl Mitchell is an underrated 4-3 defensive tackle. That front line is going to be outstanding, I think. And it's really going to generate a lot of pressure. Linebackers, you know, solid. They traded drawing a blank on the linebacker they traded.
Oh, Danelle Ellerbe.
Danelle Ellerbe, thank you.
Yeah.
But, you know, still a decent group. You know, we'll see how it plays out with, you know, a guy like Jelani Jenkins, Chris McCain. And then secondary, Brent Grimes, as you well know, was one of the better cornerbacks last season. Rashad Jones is a good safety. Louis Delmas has played well. So we'll see what happens with a guy like Jamar Taylor, if he can stay healthy and get some meaningful snaps. But overall, I think this is a really good Miami team. And if Joe Philbin doesn't hold them back, I think they're definitely a playoff team and could compete for the division. I'd be a little surprised, but not too surprised, if they were to catch and pass the Patriots to win the division. But I think, without a doubt, they're definitely a playoff contender, and I think 10-6 is certainly within reason and good enough for a wild card berth.
I'm cautiously optimistic on this team because you mentioned that you don't like Joe Philbin, and obviously I agree. I mean, I don't know anyone on earth why the cup for Joe Philbin. I know that some Dolphins fans root for him because of, I mean, obviously Dolphins fans should root, every fan should root for their coach because success for them is a great thing. Mm-hmm. And that means the team is successful. So, but it's one thing to be a team of continuity. I would just never want to be stuck in a continuous motion of mediocrity.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what Joe Philbin is. So, you know, here's what it boils down to. This is a team that's had two chances in 2 years to make the playoffs, entering the final 2 weeks of the year. Both times, his team's crapped the bed and lost. And we'll see if that changes this year. Obviously, adding a guy like Ndamukong Suh, there's no doubt that this team to me now has the talent to be a winning football team. You mentioned all the different moves that they've made. It's not a great roster overall in terms of depth, but it's good. I think it's a good roster. It's just a lot of it depends on some of these young guys. How does a guy like Devontae Parker, is he healthy? Can he develop into a quality receiver as a rookie? What's going on with Brandon Albert? If he's hurt, if he can't play at 100% what he was, that's a huge, huge, huge loss for the Dolphins. Now, obviously, we're expecting him to be 100% by like the fourth week of the season at the latest. Having him in the lineup is going to make a big difference. Mike Pouncey back at center is a huge positive. Juwan James back at his natural right tackle position is a positive. Two unproven guards in Jameel Douglas and Billy Turner. Dallas Thomas is still fighting for that left guard spot too, but ultimately I think Jamil Douglas wins out. I wouldn't be shocked if Evan Mathis is discussed either. I don't think he'd be signed by Miami because they've got future cap issues, and signing him would really hurt that flexibility that they've got to carve out. I think the line is okay. You know, obviously at this point in training camp, it's totally normal. No matter what your team is, it is normal for the defensive line to be destroying the offensive line because, one, they know the play calls. Two, they're working upfield every single play because they can't really hit the running backs anyway, at least like a real game. You know, like that contact, you just can't really simulate it in the same way. So, like, and one-on-one drills are completely in favor of defensive linemen. Like, if the defensive lineman isn't winning at least, like, half of the snaps, that tells me either, like, the offensive lineman's either really, really good or that defensive lineman is pretty bad. So, like, I don't get too worried about one-on-one results as far as, like, offensive linemen. But this offense could be really good. Greg Jennings is going to be the opposite of Mike Wallace, which is a positive. Much more reliable, much better fit into the offense. Jordan Cameron is a potential star tight end, and if he's healthy, he's a guy that Ryan Tannehill has always lacked, and he's a huge game changer. I think Kenny Stills is going to be more of like a part-time player. He can be the Mike Wallace of this team without having like the superstar contract and expectation and attitude. I think that's a good thing. It just means as like if you're into fantasy and you want to pick somebody from the Dolphins on receiving core, the only guy I would consider taking is Jarvis Landry because he's the only guy I can guarantee you would be on the field like 90% of the time.
And everyone else, I think he's probably the highest pick so far if we're talking like fantasy drafts.
Yeah, and like honestly, I wouldn't take any other receiver besides Jordan Cameron. I just don't think it's worth it because this team, they want to build what Green Bay has. And the only thing is, though, is, like, Green Bay has developed now a couple stars at receiver. But, like, that wasn't, like, their plan, really. Like, their plan wasn't really to go get, like, a guy like Randall Cobb and say, well, okay, he's going to turn into, like, a really good receiver. Or Jordy Nelson become, like, this superstar receiver. Like, that's not, like, you hope for that to happen, sure.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the plan. Like, the plan for them was to be, have a bunch of rotating guys, all very good skill players, but not necessarily stars. And if they happen to become stars, then, oh, great. Like, we're not going to complain about that. Well, that's what Miami's trying to do, too. Like, Parker is probably going to be their Jordy Nelson in a couple years. Maybe not as far as, like, high-end talent, but, like, their number one. And they're hoping that Landry is going to be, and I mean, he kind of already is, like, their Randall Cobb. So, like, I would just avoid that completely if you're a fantasy fan.
Right.
Jordan Cameron would be the high upside play that you could probably safely go after because I think he's a really special tight end when he's healthy. Running back-wise, Lamar Miller's a beast. He's developed so much. He used to be an athlete playing running back, and now he's a really good running back. Like, he's probably at the bottom end of the top 10 running backs in the league. The issue with him is that he doesn't get a huge workload because he's not super effective with big workloads. Like, he's a 15-carry-a-game guy, and then he's pretty much done. So they're going to split up carries between Jay Ajayi, Damian Williams. Even LaMichael James, I guess, has been looking pretty good. So ultimately, you know, it's going to be a production by committee offense, which I think Ryan Tannehill will just thrive in. He was so good last year just distributing the football all over the field. And now that they have egomaniac receivers out of the locker room, I think that's really going to help what this team can accomplish.
Yeah.
Defensively, you got to talk about that front four. That front four they have is nasty, and they're two or three deep at every position. From Cameron Wake to Ndamukong Suh, two potential Hall of Fame players in the primes of their careers still. Cameron Wake took a small step back last year against the run, but who cares? I mean, honestly, he's not on the field to stop the run. He's on the field to rush the passer. So he's going to probably see a little bit of a reduction of snaps against the run, I'd have to imagine. Terrence Fidey and Derek Shelby are really good players at the point of attack, and I think they're excellent third and fourth rushers. you just have to say Ndamukong Suh. I mean, good Lord, that guy is the most dominant interior defensive lineman I've seen in my life that I can really, really remember. You know, he is fantastic. Linebackers, they have some concerns. Jelani Jenkins is a good weak side linebacker. Outside of him, it's a pretty weak unit overall. And then Brent Grimes, cornerback is obviously led by him. The rest of the position, Bryce McCain's a good nickel cornerback. But then again, like when I said earlier, is like you're hoping that Jamar Taylor, Will Davis, one of those young guys kind of step up for depth purposes, and Jamar Taylor can start. Jamar Taylor's got all the talent in the world to start, but he's had a lot of freak injuries. He's not injury prone necessarily because it's not like recurring injuries. They're just freaky injuries that unfortunately have robbed him of opportunities to play. So we'll see if he can stay healthy. Brent Grimes, he is an elite cornerback when he's on, but last year we saw a massive slip as far as his speed and overall, like, just physicality. He's going to miss a lot of tackles because he's 5'9", 180 pounds. But he misses tackles at a very critical time sometimes. And if he's not going to be that 2013 version or early 2014 version of himself, if he's now that later 2014 version of who he is, that's really bad news for the Dolphins because that's not a great cornerback. That's a good cornerback. It's a low-end number one, though. And that's going to really show throughout the season. And as an aging player who has major size deficiencies already, that's a huge concern. So I'm going to be all eyes on him for sure through the preseason. Last guy I want to touch on is Rashad Jones. I think he's a fantastic safety. I think he is just tremendous. He really excels on Miami's current scheme where they have mirror safeties. So both of the safeties are capable of doing anything pre-snap. And then they determine right before the snap what they're going to do. And he is just – he's so smart. He's such an intelligent football player. He instinctually is capable of just wrecking opposing offenses in the passing game or even in the running game too because he's so physical. So, like, I think he's a top five safety in the league just based off of what he's done. His 2013 season was pretty bad after he got that big extension, but they had him doing some different things. They put him back into the mirror role, and they obviously added Lewis Delmas, and Delmas has been really good as far as a secondary leader. And he's a decent player as well, but it's more so like what he's able to do, like calling plays and such, that's been a big help. So this is a really dangerous defense. I really worry about the linebackers and cornerbacks, which those are, you know, linebackers you can overcome, cornerbacks you really can't overcome too much. So we'll see if Brent Grimes is going to be back to his top level status, then this will be a great defense. I just worry that he's going to be more closer to average. I think this is a 10-win team this year, even with offensive line concerns and secondary concerns. I just think they're going to be able to control the ball. They moved the ball extremely well last year. They got to the red zone the most times in the NFL. They didn't score touchdowns at a good rate, but I think that's going to improve with the new talent. And ultimately, I think it's going to be very difficult for a lot of teams to finish them off in games. If Miami's down, I think they've got the talent now to come back and even finish out games a little bit better than what they used to do.
All right, so one last team to talk about. We saved the best for last, the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. And I think we've had enough Deflategate talk for about 5 months that I don't even think we have to bother talking about that. We know what we're likely headed for. Either Brady is playing the start of the season or he's out the first four games. But even if he is suspended the first four games, I think Jimmy Garoppolo is okay enough that he can keep the team on course. Because it's not like it's that tough of a schedule. You know, we mentioned the Bills and their poor quarterback play. I think Garoppolo is better than any of the Bills quarterbacks. I think they're okay there. They have the Jags, who, you know, I've said I like the Jags and like what they're doing, but I think the Patriots obviously are a better team. So at worst, the Patriots should be two. Assuming the Brady's out the first four games, I think at worst, Patriots are 2-2 in those first four games. Brady comes back motivated, ready to go, and when Brady's motivated, look out. So, and other than that, it's, for the most part, a lot of the same team, minus, obviously, the two corners. Obviously, Darrelle Revis gone is going to hurt. Even Brandon Brown are gone, they're going to feel that. So the big question on this team is in the secondary position. Can guys like Malcolm Butler, Logan Ryan, Terrell Brown, can they step up? And, you know, because obviously you're not going to match the talent that Revis is leaving behind. You hope that they at least kind of plug in the holes. In the front seven, I really like Dominique Easley. You know, he's still battling that injury, but when he's healthy, I really like him to kind of replace Vince Wilfork. And then Malcolm Brown, I thought, was a real nice pick to form a nice pairing between him and Easley. And then the line's solid. I like Solder at left tackle. Trey Jackson, I think, was a good pick in the fourth round to help in the inside. Brian Stork played well late in the season. Vollmer's not bad. And then obviously, when you talk Patriots weapons, you start with Rob Gronkowski. So, despite the losses and despite the mess they've gone through at Deflategate, I think, until proven otherwise, this is still the king of the AFC East. And I think, you know, until one of the other three teams proves that they can catch the Patriots, I think the Patriots are still the favorites in the division.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, I don't know how you can go against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. You know, it's one of those things, like you said, like there's so many questions on this team. But ultimately, you know, they still have Brady. They still have a decent receiving core for him. It's not a great one. Brandon LaFell, once he comes on off the PUP list, and Julian Edelman are solid receivers. Outside of them, it's fairly docile group. You don't really get too worried about them. But they have a good punishing running attack. Their offensive line, pass protection-wise, you know, there's definitely concerns there, but it's a good run defending group, and all they need to be is good enough for Brady to maneuver. Yep. Like you mentioned, defensively, the secondary is the big question. And we'll see how they comp for the losses that they had. Devin McCourty's fantastic safety, but he's going to be working his butt off to try to cover for some of these young guys.
Yeah.
The front seven's good, though. The front seven is good. Like you mentioned, Malcolm Brown's a nice pickup, especially that late in the first round. It's a really solid linebacker group. It's probably one of the best in the NFL, if not a top three unit. If Mayo is healthy, Gerard Mayo obviously has to be healthy.
Yeah, that's the key. Definitely.
But I mean, obviously they didn't need him last year, really. So
yeah, because Jamie Collins really, really surprised everyone and really broke out in 2014. And Dante Hightower played well as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I agree with you. I think this team wins the AFC East. I'm going to go with I had Miami at 10 wins. I think this team gets 11 wins.
That's how I have it too.
Yeah. I think they just barely beat out Miami.
Yeah, could come down to that final game in Week 17 between the Patriots and Dolphins for the division title. So that's it. That's 32 teams done. You know, that was quick. These last couple weeks went fast to go through all these teams. Real quick, I guess, time to put ourselves on the spot and make playoff picks. So just to recap, so I've got in the NFC, I'll go Dallas, Green Bay, Atlanta, and Seattle as division winners, and I have Minnesota and Philadelphia as the wild cards. AFC, New England, Pittsburgh, Indy, San Diego, with Denver and Miami as the wild cards. What do you got?
NFC, I'll go Eagles as division winners, Cowboys as a wild card, Packers as a division, Vikings as a wild card, NFC South. Do you have those wins numbers off the top of your head or written down real quick?
I think you had Carolina. No.
That's what I thought. Did I have Carolina?
Because I think you had Atlanta out. We both had. Yeah, I think you had Carolina winning it.
I thought so too. That sounds right. So yeah. I'm gonna go Carolina and then Seattle, obviously in the West. AFC, I've got New England winning the East. Dolphins getting a wild card. AFC North, I'm gonna go with the Ravens winning the division and then the Steelers grabbing the wild card. Obviously the Colts win the AFC South, no real competition. And in the West, I've got the Broncos winning without a ton of competition there.
All right. And then as far as the playoffs go, I hate picking repeats, but I kind of ended up with the same conference championship matchups in both sides, just in different positions or in different places. So I've actually got Green Bay over Seattle to go to the Super Bowl, and then Indy over New England. And my official Super Bowl pick will be Aaron Rodgers hoisting his second Lombardi trophy, defeating Andrew Luck and the Colts in Super Bowl 50. So I've got Packers over the Colts.
Yeah, that is not shocking to me. I would not be at all surprised if that's what happens. Oh man, I'm so torn because like I don't feel like there's a superstar team this year. Like I don't think there's
really not. No.
I can't go with the Patriots. I'm gonna go Ravens out of the AFC. NFC. Boy, that's so tough. I'm gonna go with Philadelphia. Boy, I'm so indecisive on this.
It's tough. There's a lot of good teams in the NFC. There really are.
There are.
I mean, there's a lot of strong teams and there's a lot of dark horses.
I'll go. Screw it. I'll be wrong anyways. I'll go Philadelphia. Philadelphia winning over Baltimore.
There you go. Eagles and over the Ravens.
Yeah, it just really comes back to talent to me. I just feel like I really feel like Philadelphia is the most talented team.
And if that happens, I'll drive down to Virginia and I'll buy a like 2 liters of beer or something. I'll buy a whole round of beer for you if that happens. So that's it. That's 32 teams discussed, and our Super Bowl picks are in. We both have the NFC taking home the crown. Next time we join you, we'll actually have a game to talk about. It's going to be fun to sit here next week and actually talk about a game that just happened a couple of days ago. We'll discuss the Hall of Fame game, and then we'll look ahead to week one of the preseason, and maybe we'll talk a little college. Who knows? It's getting close and it's getting exciting. So, for Ian, remember you can follow him at NFL Film Study, and you can follow me at Bill_Rossetti. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the Hall of Fame ceremony on Saturday, and enjoy the Hall of Fame game on Sunday. And we'll see you right here next week on the Gridiron Graduates. Until then, take care, everybody.